Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Expressing your love can look many different ways. And with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, welcome to another Rahulastapa Book Club. This week we are reading the book Turned On by Kate Devlin, who is joining us remotely. Hello, Kate.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm very good, thank you. I'm looking forward to this.
I'm very much, well, you know, we've been a lot of times people have suggested I should talk to you because we share an interest in the subject of this book. Mine is more comedic, but this book is subtitled Science, Sex and Robots, which might give people an idea of why I'm interested in it. Could you tell, before we get onto the book, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and who you are?
I am an academic. So the official job title is Reader in Artificial Intelligence and Society at King's College London. And I'm a computer scientist, although many years ago I was an archaeologist. It was a bit of a career jump. I've been studying sex robots for the past 6 or 7 years, and I wrote a book about it.
Well, I got interested in sex robots because I had an argument with my wife after watching the TV show Humans, which you reference in your book, and saying that I wondered why the wife was upset for the husband for sleeping with the robot of Gemma Chan, because I didn't consider it cheating. My wife did consider it cheating. How did you get interested in sex robots? That's where that's all come from. What sparked your interest in this subject?
Lots of things. I was working on lots of different aspects of robotics and AI and human-computer interaction. And I think a lot of this stemmed from the pub, because we were in the pub after a conference talking about all the things that you could get robots to do. And what would it mean if they could feel things as well? So if you had a robot, for example, that could feel pain, that might be really useful, because if it got damaged, it would limit the damage. It would know to back off from whatever was causing pain. And of course, because we were drinking, the subject turned to sex. And there'd already been quite a few people working in this area. Bits and pieces of that were coming through onto the academic side of things. And then suddenly the stars aligned, and I had a master's student who was interested in the topic. And a group of us started looking at it, and the rest is history.
Well, the best thing from the book is that it gives a legal answer to the question, is having sex with a robot cheating? And I'll be delighted to take that passage to my wife, because legally it is not cheating to have sex with a robot. So that's the end of the conversation. That's the end of the subject. I have won the argument with my wife. Yeah, I suppose there's a little bit more to that. The book is about a lot more than sex robots, really, though. So you're looking at the history of both computers and sex and how they align. I mean, there's very interesting stuff about... I mean, I think you argue that the, if I remember rightly, that you, that the dildo may have been invented 25,000 years before the wheel. Is that
very possibly? Yeah. So we have evidence of these phallic-shaped objects appearing in you know cave sites from 28,000 years ago, and that's pretty exciting. We don't know what they were for, and if you ask an archaeologist, and I can say this because I used to be one, they'll say, "Oh, it's ceremonial or it's ritual," because that's the kind of thing we like to say when we don't really know what something was used for. Why not? Perhaps dildos, you know, the shape is, gives away yeah. that it might have been. But there is actually a long history of sex toys and dildos, and we've certainly got written records of those going back to the ancient Greeks.
Yes, because a lot of them will have been made of materials that don't necessarily survive. Well, being pounded into people's anuses and vaginas and vulvas, but equally in the fossil in the things like leather and wood and things which will tend to decompose,
right, yeah.
especially if they're covered in spunk and stuff.
Indeed. Well, I mean, there was one supposedly found recently in England at a site that was supposed to be one of the only surviving wooden Roman dildos, but someone else has come along and said, "Oh, we think it's actually part of a spindle for spinning wool." So,
things have two uses, don't they, Kate?
That's wonderful.
You're not using your dildo the entire time, so you know,
exactly.
you put it on the spindle for a bit, and then you can hide it from your mum as well if it's on the spindle. So it all works out very well. It is this sort of big subject, and it's I've come at it from like a comedic point of view. I mean, pointing out in the sketch I did that women are sort of happy, and some men as well are happy to take just the penis and throw the rest of the robot away. It sort of feels like the sex robots we see in and the robots we see in science fiction are all kind of geared one way, which they're sexy, generally speaking, sort of sexually alluring women, and B, they all gain consciousness and either rebel or are sad or whatever. And how likely it feels to me it's pretty unlikely, even if we were to manage to create a robot that was as good as Gemma Chan is in humans, that it would gain actual consciousness. Is that something that's even really realistically possible?
It's so far at the moment from it, despite the hype and the headlines, and actually even making a human-like robot is really, really difficult. The robots we have in the world today, a lot of them are in factories on production lines. They don't look anything like humans. And the most common ones in our homes are robot vacuum cleaners, which people do get very attached to, but they don't quite have those. Well, I mean, they could have some of those same purposes, but they're not human-like. And actually, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice if we think that a sex robot needs to be in a human form, because I think there's other things you could do there as well. You could go down very interesting design routes. But right now, I know it's really difficult to make a human-like robot. We're so far away from sentient AI. But the closest that seems to be around the moment are companies like Abyss Creations that make Real Doll, who've put some animatronics into their sex dolls and put an AI personality in there as well, which you can also get as a standalone app, so you can have a girlfriend app, and it is girlfriend because, of course, it's very gendered. So there are proto sex robots out there.
But as you say, with that kind of AI language, it's still in its infancy, really. So I think there's a question in what do you know about me or something, and the AI takes that as referring to the domain name of Moldova or something.
Yeah.
I can't quite remember what it is.
That's right.
And there's some glitches in there.
It's glitchy, but when we see like the advent of these large language models that are coming out now, like ChatGPT, I mean, that's phenomenal in terms of generating realistic sounding conversation, but there's no understanding there. And quite often it comes out with an absolute load of crap. So it sounds plausible, but it's pretty meaningless. So we're the actual understanding and knowledge, real knowledge, isn't there.
But also it is about, you know, it still has that image of being, and I think you sort of just within the book, you sort of make this, that it isn't necessarily the case, that a sex robot is basically just a kind of jazzed up rubber doll, whatever, these sex doll that used to get kind of around at bachelor parties and stuff, and advertised in the back of porn magazines.
A little bit more expensive than that.
But you sort of imagine you're still having sex with an object, which is fine if that's what you're into, but I can't really even conceive of a point where you would, however good it was at talking to you and however good it was at moving, however human it felt, if you could do that, it seems like a big stretch to actually get to that point where it's any more than just a machine and a fantasy machine and an object, rather than feeling you're making love with a human being.
That's right. So it's definitely an illusion you need to buy into. But there are communities of people out there who are in relationships with their sex dolls. And for them, it's not a delusionary thing. It's not that they're not in some way going crazy here and thinking that these things are real. It's buying into the play aspects and the imagination aspects as well. So for with the sex robot, it sort of actually removes some of that imagination, because it stifles the interactions because you rely on the technology. So some people aren't that interested in it because it breaks that illusion. But yeah, it's really just, you cannot mistake these things for being human.
No, but you talk to some owners of the current sort of models, the more expensive models, as well as going to the factory to see them being made. And they don't, you know, I think what I've seen, like, certainly when I've seen the scientists who've been, you know, demonstrating these machines, they're sort of, I mean, you mentioned the guy who had who made a non-sexual version of, I've forgotten the name of the actress now, but
the Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson. I remember seeing him and thinking, this makes me feel a bit queasy. It feels like there's more, which we can get onto, like using other people's identity. But within the book, it feels like the people using them aren't what might be the stereotypical idea of, you know, sad, lonely.
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions, I think, around who the sort of people are who buy these, because you need to have a lot of money for starters to be able to afford these things. They're high end, expensive products. You're talking upwards of, you know, $3,000, $4,000 for a doll, and then, you know, $10,000 upwards for a version with animatronics in it as well. So, you know, these are, and these aren't just people who are alone and looking for a woman to control, which seems to be a very big narrative, but these are people, some people are in relationships, some of them are interested purely from an engineering perspective, how cool this can be. So all walks of life, well, many walks of life, not all walks of life, but many walks of life, predominantly men. It's really, really hard to find women who will talk about having dolls or wanting to have.
But they are sort of marketed at men at the moment, and as the book sort of discusses, you know, there may be different ways of going about it. But I think that, having joked about this subject a lot, and this book does make you think seriously about it. It's a funny book, and as scientific and as well researched as it is, you don't shy away from the fact that there's some humor in this subject. But if you really think about it, I mean, a sex robot, even if they were great and even if everyone had them and they existed, then the actual sex part is a very small part. You know, you're not going to, even if you had one, unless you're like Morty in Rick and Morty, when he gets a sort of alien sex doll that he spends all his day fucking until she gets pregnant and has a baby, you're only using that for a small portion of the day. So in reality, it's much more likely to be, we're much more likely to get companion robots. Especially given there's, you know, there's so many actual very good representations of human beings who will have sex with you, either over online or in reality, for money or for free. So that part of it is always only going to be a small part. You know, if you want realistic sex, then there's other ways to go. So it's there. Yeah. It is a sort of companionship thing.
It is a companionship thing, and which is why one of the things I think will happen, rather than seeing sex robots come onto the scene in large numbers like some kind of fembot army, I think we're instead going to see a rise in companionship AI apps, which is already happening. There's already lots of people out there talking to AIs as if they are romantic partners. And I've got a PhD student, my PhD student Chloe Locatelli, looks at this. She's looking at this idea that there's some kind of like almost post-human sex work going on. So you've got these apps and they provide this girlfriend experience for people. And how is that advertised? And it's very much advertised like it's an emotional connection, like it's a partnership. You know, this is the perfect partner who will always be there for you. And she can talk dirty, but she can also, you know, see how your day was or say nice things about you. So I think that's the much more monetizable future.
Sure. I mean, it sort of is interesting to think, because any guesses we make now, and I think even someone as knowledgeable about this as you, you know, any guesses we make in 50 years' time, people are going to look back and go, oh, that's what they thought was going to happen. Because it's sort of so difficult to predict where the technology will go, but also what people will be interested in. I mean, you know, you sort of imagine, would there be, if they became good enough sex robots and companionship robots and people married their robots, is the human race going to reach a point where, you know, people who have sex with people are looked on as being the weird ones because you can just have your perfect partner as a robot?
I don't think so. So from all the research I've done, I think that humans are really good at being humans. And there's something about seeking out other humans. I mean, that's deeply embedded in our DNA, this attempt to pass it on subconsciously or even consciously. So I'm not too worried. I don't think that we're going to see replacing humans with these relationships, but I think they could be their own thing, their own category, and I think they could be a companionable aspect. And we do this all the time with other things, like characters in books. We have these parasocial relationships with actors on TV and film, or with, you know, fan fiction that thousands of people, millions of people around the world are writing really in-depth and incredibly saucy stories about their favorite fictional characters. So is it any wonder that we can take all this stuff and project it onto technology as well?
Sure. And I think a lot of things about romance, I think certainly from my point of view anyway, I felt like when I was a single man and when I was interested in, I mean, I'm still interested in having sex with my wife, but when I'm still interested in having sex with other people, but I'm not going to do it. But when I was a single man, you know, it was the romance, it was the seduction, it was, will this person fancy me back? And even if you program a robot to sort of put up some barriers to the final act, you're never going to feel, oh wow, I've got this real connection with a real person, and we've even at least just fancy each other enough to have sex with each other, which I suppose is also the case with sex workers. If you're having sex with sex workers, you've either got to pretend to yourself that there's a relationship or know that there's no relationship. So it's not that sex, you know, there's different types of sex, as you know, Kate, but
absolutely.
There's
but
there's, you know, it is sort of, I think I can't really envisage a situation where it becomes like commonplace. I think what's interesting in the book, and something I hadn't thought about, is what you mentioned briefly there, is the idea of creating something completely different. And so you talk about having things with tentacles or making a duvet that can turn into breasts or cocks or whatever you want. There's lots of kind of weird and nice ideas that could be, you know, could enhance sexuality or enhance masturbation. Which, you know, so yeah, that's a really interesting part of the book, I think, of thinking about, you know, exploring sexuality and sensuality in a virtual arena.
Because there's so many avenues. We have so many cool bits of technology. So back in 2016, with the help of my students, we ran a sex tech hackathon. So a hackathon is where you get people together for usually 48 hours, a bunch of techies in a room, give them some pizza, they come up with these things. Well, we wanted to do a cooler sex tech version of that. So we got together people from many different disciplines. There were tech people, yes, but there were also artists, musicians, psychologists, industry experts on sex tech. And they worked in teams to come up with these interesting new prototypes that weren't reliant on the human form, that weren't just about physical experiences, but could be about the psychological or the sensuous as well. And there were some fantastic things, you know, soft robotic tentacles that you could put anywhere on your body and they would squeeze you. Or this wonderful one that was a paper fan that opened up when there were signs of vaginal arousal. They did that by putting moisture sensors on a vaginal egg, and it drove this fan that was a flamboyant display of arousal. And then the following year when we ran it, there was a what I called a sensual shawl, and they called a sex blanket, where there were sensors in it, and you could put this around yourself, and you could imagine rose petals falling from the ceiling. In virtual reality, you could see those, and then you would feel the sensors kick off as if they were touching your skin. So we have all this really cool tech that we can put into lots of interesting experiences, and sexual or sensuous or intimate. And yeah, the problem is that there isn't funding to do those kinds of things because venture capitalists are kind of stifled by what they can put money into. There's usually morality clauses. And also, you know, they may not be commercially scalable as well. So we're still playing around with these things.
Oh, I think they'll be commercially scalable. What I would like, Kate, if you could, for when, especially when I'm an older man and virtual reality is very good, I would like to just be able to go back and relive experiences that I'd had in my life, but be able to Groundhog Day them. So when I've messed up with past relationships, or if you had a really great time with someone, but the danger of that, you go back and do it again, and it's not as good. But there's several times I think, oh, I wish I could go back and I realised that girl fancied me, or I was about to have a threesome and I blew it, or whatever. And I'd love to be able to go back and, you know, pretend I'm 25 again, and B, relive those experiences. So if you could get working on that, I'll put some money into it.
I'll do it. I mean, this is the metaverse that Mark Zuckerberg doesn't want, but let's try for it.
I think, and I don't think that counts as, does that count as cheating to go back in time and be yourself before you met your partner?
Well, the cheating thing. So technically, legally, you couldn't file for divorce and say, for adultery and say, my spouse had sex with a robot, because adultery in the UK has to be between a person and another person of the opposite sex. So it's actually, you know, there still isn't even equality in the adultery divorce laws. So don't confuse this by bringing robots into it. You could probably cite, you know, some kind of behavior that was causing distress, I guess. But in terms of whether or not it's cheating between you and your partner, that is something that has to be negotiated in every relationship. So I'm sorry
stop ruining it. It isn't cheating. If it's me in the past before I met my wife, that doesn't count. You can't
imprison. I don't
imprison,
think it counts.
You
I don't
can't
think
imprison
it counts.
My mind. You can
That's
imprison
right.
my
and
body.
I strongly agree with that. I think our fantasies are one of the things that are so personal, and you know, we shouldn't be policing other people's fantasies, even if they're really terrible. They shouldn't necessarily act on them, but they should be allowed to think them, I think.
Yeah, I think you're allowed to. But that's where this, I think, gets into like a weird space, because it sort of extends, and the internet generally, I think, which I'm surprised hasn't sort of destroyed it probably has destroyed a lot of relationships, but that kind of availability of being able to contact anyone in the world, and you know, and well, some of them will take their clothes off for you, and some of them will for money, and some of them will do it for free. And
the internet has also caused and brought about so many relationships. I reckon there's been more relationships have come out of it than have been destroyed by it. I met my husband on Twitter, so I'm going to go with it being a positive thing overall. But yes, there probably are lots of ones getting destroyed.
Well, it sort of makes like, you know, when you even think, what would it have been like for a married man in the 1940s or 1950s who, you know, had only had sex with one person in their life, who was thinking, I wonder what life would have been like. There would have been some photos of, you know, and if we go back 200 years before that, there's some pictures, some drawings. But like the ability we have to just be able to look at loads of sexual scenarios on our computers is sort of, you know, is, I think, probably, I mean, this is the problem with I wanted to get onto this, the morality of it, really, obviously, of course, in that you can say for pornography and for sex robots, some people will argue, well, this will stop people doing sexual crimes because they'll have a robot at home to have sex with. And other people will say, or they have pornography at home. Other people say the pornography will make them, and the sex robots will make them want to go out and do these things in real life. So we're sort of stuck with that same argument that we've had over the years for, I guess, right since someone drew a pair of boobs on a cave wall.
Pretty much. And we've seen this play out with video games as well. You know, does video game violence lead to violence in the real world? And the answer seems to be no, it doesn't. And in some cases, we'll minimize potential for violence. But then this is fairly inconclusive because people will come in and cherry pick things from both sides. And it's really hard to tell. Very similar with porn. I think if we, given the huge wide availability of porn, if we were to see increased violence on a large scale, that's not, it doesn't correlate with the amount of access people have to porn. So we're not seeing that. However, we can say that there are norms changing because of the themes that come up in that. So yes, it's really tricky. And also this idea that if people had robots, you know, will it help them not act out terrible crimes, or will it lead to an increase in crimes? That's a very complicated thing, because we're never going to get that through an ethics committee to try and test it. In all the work all the research I did, everyone I talked to who was a doll owner, they cherish those dolls and treat them really, really respectfully. And it's not just because these are expensive pieces of kit. The whole ethos of doll owners is that these are often a form of a relationship and that involves care. And so that causing harm to them is not what's happening here. And I did ask, you know, are there people who do enact violence on these dolls? And someone had said, well, you know, there are, but they're not in our community. That's not the kind of thing we do. And I think there's outliers in all these sorts of we're going to say hobbies, because it's kind of like a hobby group. It really is. And everyone was so gracious. They were really kind to talk to me about this, the other people that I talked to.
It is, you know, it is interesting. And I guess it's in a very similar arena, except that the more physical it becomes, the less fantasy it becomes. So as you say, I think we're allowed to have our fantasies. But I mean, I suppose that Westworld thing where that, you know, it does become people murdering each other and raping each other and that sort of thing. I suppose that is possibly going to be something that has to be looked at and decided upon, though it seems pretty clear.
legally, at least
what's allowed. I also think people who are like that are not going to get off on, you know, if that's your inclination, you're not going to get off on murdering something that isn't alive.
Exactly, which is, you know, for part of the book, I had to trawl through some incel forums, which was absolutely grim. It wasn't long after the attack in Toronto a few years ago. And that was because people were coming out with these articles in the news saying, well, what these incels need is a sex robot. And you're like, oh, I don't think that's going to work. You can't just you know, engineer out misogyny by saying, here, have a robot, because they're just going to say, you don't want that. And of course, that's what was happening in the forums. They were saying, no, that's just a cope. This is just it's an excuse. It's not a real woman. We'll only be happy when the real women give in.
Although maybe a sex robot could teach somebody how to behave with women, and what you could go play a video game where it says, this is, if you behave in this manner, you will not have a girlfriend. Anyway.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think also more interesting and less dodgy territory, although still dodgy, but in a more interesting way, is the kind of moralistic. I mean, we've got deep fake pornography now, obviously, which is sort of worrying. But you mm-hmm. could obviously start selling sex dolls of Scarlett Johansson if you could get away with it. So you could take someone's actual image and use that within these devices. And how can you stop that happening? And or would everyone just have to license their image out and take the money?
Yeah. Licensing seems to be probably the way that would go. And it certainly happened already with the real doll sex dolls, where there's porn performers who have licensed their likeness to be used as dolls. But yeah, that's really tricky with, you know, with famous people like Scarlett Johansson. You know, I think the manufacturer, the robot engineer there got away with it because it wasn't being done commercially. Yeah. But the minute you try and build these commercially, you're going to have all kinds of lawsuits in your hand. But it does lead to bigger questions about who owns your identity, what yeah. rights you have. You know, you don't have the right to not be photographed in a public place, right? Anyone can take your picture if you're in a public place, and you can't do anything about it. So, you know, what's to stop someone making a robot of you? Well, hopefully there's something that can be done if you're not happy about it.
I don't mind. I mean, if people want to make I'd kind of like, we discussed this in a recent podcast, but, you know, I think all sex robots should just be made to look like me as a sort of Twilight Zone punishment for everyone else. Should, but I'd be happy. You know, there's an element where you could obviously, and just not for a sex robot, but with a robot, you could have a robot of your deceased partner. You could have a robot of your younger yeah. self.
Yeah.
Just to have yeah. around. Is it cheating to have sex with a robot of yourself that's younger than a younger version of yourself?
It's just a form of masturbation, isn't it?
It
really?
Is. A yeah. wonderful form.
Well, the idea of the deceased partner thing, that's been explored in quite a few TV shows. And there's yeah. an episode of Black Mirror that looks at that. And, you know, the problem there was it wasn't quite right. It wasn't quite accurate enough yeah. for the grieving widow, and also, you know, yes, it's kind of weird, but it brings up loads of questions about grieving processes and what happens when you die and a robot like you is left behind, or even the opposite, what happens if your robot dies. And that's what I'm really into at the minute, is looking at this kind of idea of robot mortality.
Right.
And, you know, you've got an ageless robot there, you know, your sex robot's not going to age, and there you are getting older and older. Yeah. And this beautiful young robot looking at you. Maybe you want an older robot. Maybe you want it to age.
They'll be able to do that. They'll be able to work that out. The other thing that you do again mention in the book is there was sort of a slew of articles about that sex robots will rise up and kill us, or will be
yeah.
so vigorous they'll kill us. Do you think that there's a possibility of this?
These come up every now and again. I think there was a Gizmodo headline that said sex robots will fuck us all to death, which actually was making a really good point about AI, which is if you don't get the question stated in the right way, it might not obey instructions properly, like the magic porridge pot that just kept making porridge and kept making porridge until the whole world was just porridge. So it's that kind of thing, you know, it keeps going. The sex robot is told to only stop when you're satisfied, but you never reach orgasm, so it just fucks you to death. So, you know, what a hazard. But then what a way to go, maybe. So, yeah, there are always these stories. And then someone else had said a couple of years ago, oh, yeah, no, the sex robots could murder you. And I was thinking, but I don't see how. These things can't, the current prototypes can't stand up on their own, can't move their limbs. I think you might drop one in a bath while it was plugged in charging, and that would probably kill you. But I don't see how else you're going to do it. So I think we're safe for now.
Well, it is, but it's always that it's annoying to me I mean, I can understand why it is, but the sci-fi tropes, anything new will go evil and destroy you,
yeah.
or turn wrong and destroy you. And when you look at technology, obviously sometimes technology isn't our friend, or something goes wrong with technology, but the advances that we've made in the last 40 or 50 years as a result of technology are extraordinary and largely positive. And so, you know, I think this idea that robots... I mean, it's possible, and it's an exciting thing to, you know, you can't argue with the Terminator being a fantastic idea for a film in every degree, but the idea that the robots would definitely in pretty much every scenario you see, the robots are treated like slaves and then don't like it and then turn on their human masters, usually yeah. in a kind of a sort of thinly veiled and embarrassingly sort of studentry allegory of the human race's own horribleness. But yeah, I mean, it seems that robots are more like to be useful than destroy us, and more like to wank us off than destroy us.
Yeah, more likely to vacuum your floor and build cars. And also wank us off, I guess. But yeah, these sci-fi stories, these narratives, we've been telling them for thousands of years. They go right back to Greek myth and legend. And it speaks a lot about our own fears of loss of agency, of being replaced, of being worthless because something better comes along. And when you get that into the sex realm as well, where you think, well, what if a machine, what if something that I have no control over comes and takes my partner or, you know, my sex life, then yeah, absolutely, you're going to see a lot of stories around that. And this kind of presentation of the female robot, the fembot or the gynoid, that keeps coming up, and they always tend to be the kind of ruthless femme fatale, and it's almost like, you know, woman breaks programming, smashes the patriarchy. Oh no, dystopia. So there's a lot going on there as well.
And how many years away are we from having a sex robot that looks exactly like Gemma Chan and acts exactly like Gemma Chan and is indistinguishable from Gemma Chan in every regard?
I'm going to say that it won't be in my lifetime. And the reason I say that is I hate making predictions that might... or might not be disproven while I'm still alive. So I'm going to say not in our lifetime, maybe the next generation.
I suppose so many things are possible. It just feels like there would always, I mean, you talk about this, the uncanny valley thing, isn't it, that you mentioned in the book, is that there'll always be this feeling that this is not real.
We're really good at detecting things that are not quite real. I mean, the gap is closing quite a bit. If you look at the sort of AI-generated art at the minute, where you have to count the number of teeth or the number of fingers to check to be sure that these aren't actual real humans.
Yes.
And maybe we'll get to that stage. It's really tricky. I am fairly reluctant to say that we'll have human-like robots anytime soon. I don't think we will at all. But then the last time I said that on Twitter in response to the Tesla robot, I had hundreds of Elon Musk fanboys jumping in to tell me how wrong I was and what did I know, and I didn't know anything. So, you know.
Have things moved on? Because the book was written a little... It's a few years since you wrote the book, right? Was it 2018?
Yeah, five years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so have things moved on significantly in those 5 years?
Not in robotics. Terms of the production of sex robots, which were still very much at prototype stages when I was writing, and now I have just about got to market stage, so still not really out there. And we're talking a handful of workshops worldwide, you know, a couple in China and a couple in the US that are trying to build these out of sex dolls, so it's really not a big market. They're sort of custom building for people. It's a lot of hype over substance. But what has come along a long way since then is the AI companion aspects and the dirty talking AI. So that's definitely picked up a lot since I wrote the book.
Yeah, I've managed to get some good emergency questions written by AI. So I'm replaceable soon. Soon you won't have to asking you questions here. I'm sure I should have just done all AI questions for you, but I think they would have probably been the same as mine, with that a bit less perverted than mine. Look, it's a really interesting book, and it is a sort of fascinating topic the more you go into it. And it is great that it's not all just about having, you know, it's not just the story of an academic who goes out fucking loads of robots. If you're expecting that, you're going to be slightly disappointed. There's only about four chapters of that, of Kate having sex. No.
Yeah.
But would you have sex? I mean, as an academic, see, as a comedian, I don't really want to have sex with the robots at all. But now I've made such a big thing of it. That if the opportunity came, I might have to go ahead. From an academic point of view, would you test the merchandise if the right one came along?
Out of curiosity, I probably would. I mean, give anything a go except incest and Morris dancing, isn't that it? So yeah, why not? I mean, certainly the sex toys, the sex tech, more than happy to test those. When I ran the sex tech hackathon, I used to get sent big boxes of sex toys. We were using them as prizes and also to cut up and reconfigure into various things. And I always managed to order duplicates just for, you know, I've got a big box in my office and a box at home. So yeah, that's, you know, it's useful to have insider knowledge of these things. Yeah,
exactly. Although I'm so vanilla, and I used to do a gig, which was I can't remember what the charity was for, but Love Honey. We'd always get a box full of various sex toys, and I just had to give them all away because I was too embarrassed to look at them. I've got a couple in the drawer, but I've never. There's one that goes. It's like a big curly thing, and I don't like to think where it goes, but I haven't had the heart to get rid of it in case I want to experiment with that at some point in my life. But there we go. That's too much information.
Some of them are very beautiful. Some of them are fascinating designed and look like ornaments. You couldn't even tell.
Well, I should be, you know, it's my own. Weirdly, on stage and as a comedian, I'll talk about all sorts of stuff, but in real life, I'm a very shy and repressed man. But you know, that's a good thing. Are you reading any other books at the moment, or have you read anything recently you would like to, and it doesn't have to be about sex robots, but it can be, that you'd like to recommend?
Say what I've been reading recently. Yes, I'm halfway through John Darnielle's Devil House, and he's the guy that formed and is basically the one man band, the Mountain Goats, and he's written this amazing, very atmospheric kind of horror novel, and yeah, I'm really enjoying that.
Terrific. Good. Well, look, it's really lovely to meet you, Kate, and keep up the fantastic work. Let me know if there's any developments with the realistic ones in my life. If it's not in your lifetime, it's not going to be in my lifetime. My lifetime's got a very short span, but maybe I'll put my head in storage and then my head and my penis in storage, and then I can come back and have sex with her. I can be made into a sex robot then, right?
I think you should get in touch with Real Doll because they're developing a male version, and you could get in early. You could help.
Yeah, if it was, see, that'd be nice. It'd be nice to be immortalized, and then know after your death that people are still making love to your fantastic body, your beautiful body, in plastic form, whatever it's made of. So I would quite like to. I'm happy to have one modelled after me. I'm not convinced it would sell that well, but you never know, do you?
No kink shaming.
I'm allowed to kink shame people who are interested in having sex with me. I think that's the one kink I'm allowed to say that is deeply wrong. And my wife and anyone else who's been interested should be thoroughly ashamed of themselves. Thank you so much for talking to us, Kate, and being a very good sport about this. Do buy Kate Devlin's Turned On. Are you working on any other books at the moment? This is a while ago.
I am working on an academic book called AI for Sex that doesn't just look at sex tech, but looks at other things like how AI is used in porn or in combating things like human trafficking. And okay. I'm very, very interested in this mortality side of things. So I'm hoping that my next book kind of dives down into that.
Brilliant. It sounds fantastic. A big recommend for this book. I think you will enjoy it, everyone. And we'll be back soon with more of these. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.